Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You heard the game last night right here on Sports Radio 810. And Buster Olney, our baseball insider, joins us now. Good morning, Buster. How are you?
Scrambling. It's been a busy day. Yeah, part of that broadcast last night, we got done about 12:30, and then jumping up this morning and talking about how the Rays are alive. They're alive. It's a lot of fun, and it's also nice that we have an off day today.
You know, Buster, you don't need to be told this, but I'm an idiot. After game one, I just said, you know, man, it feels like this is the Dodgers' year. They're finally going to get a ring for Clayton Kershaw, and they're just going to steamroll the Rays in this series. And then, of course, the Rays went out and won last night, and so that's not going to happen. And who knows what happens after this, but it was good to see the Rays bounce back and even this series. What have been your main takeaways after watching the first two games of this World Series?
Yeah, and I'm always... it's interesting that you and I agree so often, Stephen. I mean, I felt the exact same way. I thought, coming off Game 1, that I really felt like the Dodgers had this sort of momentum that was going to be difficult for the Rays to stop. You know, they had stared into the abyss of a 3-1 deficit against the Braves. They had come back and won that one. They blow out the Rays in Game 1. Their offense is rolling. Everything is going well. And last night, I think basically two guys drew a line in the sand. And Brandon Lau, who had struggled so badly, and Blake Snell. And it's funny. I picked the Dodgers to win in six before the series started. But you can feel the pendulum swing back toward the Rays with that win last night, because Kevin Cash was able to manage his bullpen aggressively. His bullpen is better. He's got better weapons. And now they have the off day, and he can rest those guys. And moving forward, he's going to be in a good position to make adjustments. I still like the Dodgers to win the series, but between the bullpen and having Charlie Morton, who's been so unbelievable in the postseason in recent years, starting Game 3, that certainly, there's life in the Rays that I wouldn't have thought was going to be there after watching Game 1.
Nate, could you lend me your ear real quick? When Buster was talking about how much he agrees with me that we agree on things, did you detect more, was he ashamed or embarrassed? Which one did
I think he was relieved that he was saying it to you and not me. You know, like, well, at least I agree with Steven.
I got you. All right.
So that's better than agreeing with Nate.
What you heard was concern. There's a lot of concern in my voice.
As well as should be.
Hey Buster, you talk about that Rays bullpen being better than the Dodgers. I heard something last night on the broadcast that really surprised me because of that very thought process. And I always think of the Rays as the team that's been more aggressive with being willing to, you know, have an entire game where they go bullpen by committee with the opener and all that. The Dodgers have actually made more pitching changes and used their bullpen more in the postseason than the Rays have this year. Is that surprising to you, and what do you make of that?
Well, I think what it comes down to is the fact that there's not a stable number three starter for the Dodgers. You know, someone who you look at and go, okay, that's our guy. Dustin May is a talented young pitcher, and he's shown in the postseason this year that maybe he's a year or two away from that really, you know, from being in control. Tony Gonsolin the same way. You know, he started last night. He didn't really look that good. In fact, it's to the point now where, you know, this the opener and the bullpen games is going to manifest potentially one more time for the Dodgers in the series in Game 6. And there was talk after that showing by Gonsolin last night and the showing by May that, you know what, if there's a Game 6, maybe a better way for Dave Roberts to go is to go with Alex Wood. But, you know, Kenta Maeda left after or was traded away by the Dodgers last winter. You know, they traded away Ross Stripling to the Toronto Blue Jays, trying to maximize on the value that those guys had. And as we sit here today, it does feel like they're one guy short. I think that's a big reason why, because in those games, man, Dave is using his bullpen a lot. I do think the Rays are more comfortable, you know, using the bullpen strategy, A, because they basically invented it, and B, they have the better weapons, and Kevin Cash is so adept at manipulating those.
Buster Olney is our guest. Buster, Kevin Cash did get a lot of criticism for the way he handled Tyler Glasnow in the first game and left him in to throw his career high 112 pitches. What did you think of the reaction around baseball and on social media to how Kevin Cash handled his pitching staff in that first game?
I've told you guys this story, and I'm going to tell it to you again, and it actually took place in Kansas City. I remember walking up to Bruce Bochy during the 2014 World Series and saying, "Hey, Boch, I'm trying to keep up. Are you?" And I wrote the story when Bruce Bochy first became a manager in San Diego, so I'd known him for a long time. And I walked up and I said, "Hey, I'm trying to keep track. Are you a complete idiot today, or are you an absolute genius? Because that's the way it goes in the World Series. If your team wins, then you're an absolute genius, and the moves you make are lauded. And if you lose, then everyone questions your moves." I think Kevin Cash, you know, now that Buck Showalter and Bruce Bochy aren't managing, I think Kevin Cash is the best manager of a bullpen. I you know, knew why he managed it the way that he did. They were losing. And he didn't want, you know, Tyler Glasnow. First off, you know, they know that he is a beast who can throw 115 pitches. They also know that he sometimes is overcome by adrenaline. So he was trying to get as much out of Tyler Glasnow as possible in that game one, especially when they fell behind, so that he could manage his bullpen more aggressively in game two. And that's how it played out. In the end, I thought, you know, that Kevin handled it well in the first game, because the biggest thing was he wanted to leave those big, important relievers to Peter Fairbanks, Diego Castillo, Nick Anderson, you know, untouched, and so he could use them in bigger spots in game two.
And Fairbanks has been terrific, and that's a Mizzou kid, so we pay more attention to him. Tell me what you think of Pete Fairbanks.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to him. You know, that's one of those guys I wish I could, you know, be down on the field on and pull him to the side and just start asking him some questions. All of his mannerisms, you know, that thing where they pointed out on the radio broadcast how he never blinks. Like, when he's out on the mound and he's staring in, he never blinks. And I'm kind of like, where's that coming from? And I noticed this in his delivery last night. He kind of reminds me, you guys remember the old Dodger lefty that I rooted for as a kid, Fernando Valenzuela. When Fernando was in the middle of his delivery, he would stare toward the sky. Pete Fairbanks does the same thing, and I'd love to know about that mannerism. But boy, he's you know, got an electric fastball, got a great breaking ball, and I love his confidence. The division series that the Rays played, that was on ESPN, and Pete went into the interview room after one of the games and pointed out that ESPN had some names wrong on some of their graphics. And he's like, "Well, that tells you everything about us, right? Like, we're the island of misfit toys," and that's my phrase, not his. And no one really, you know, even knows who we are. And I kind of like that he was sticking it in our face a little bit.
I believe Nuke LaLoosh called it breathing through your eyelids, right? Wasn't that that was
right.
The approach. Hey, speaking of misfit toys, the guy that's becoming like the big fan favorite, we love him, and especially, I guess, because the St. Louis Cardinals let him go, Randy Arozarena. I believe I saw you tweet that he's now tied Derek Jeter for most postseason hits by a rookie. And I know he hasn't been off to the hottest start so far in the World Series, but what a great story he is. What do you like the most about the story of Randy Arozarena?
That, you know, the reason why the Cardinals moved him, of course, or I don't know if it was the actual D reason, but they moved him after he posted that video of Mike Schilt making the profane speech in the clubhouse, and it was shortly thereafter. And I know that there was that feeling of, well, that's not really the Cardinal way. You know, we don't do that type of thing. And I doubt that was the absolute reason why they moved him. But for him to go to Tampa Bay and now become this guy, you know, doing 500 push-ups a day, and based on everything we're hearing from his manager, Kevin Cash, he's really good at making adjustments. I would say this: I don't think he's going to do any damage in this World Series. He might get some, you know, hits here and there. He beat out an infield hit last night, but the Dodgers basically have now had three rounds of postseason to watch him, and they've decided, you know what, he's not beating us. And all those fastballs that he was destroying before, he's not getting them. In the first two games of this World Series, he's seen a total of five fastballs. Like, they are just throwing all kinds of slop at him, and they are not going to give him anything to hit. You know, the only way that's going to change is if Brandon Lau continues to build off what he did last night.
Buster Olney is our guest. All right, Buster, you mentioned Charlie Morton and his success in the postseason. That's the next pitching matchup, Walker Buehler and Charlie Morton for Game 3 on Friday night right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Your thoughts on the Game 3 pitching matchup?
Yeah, it's a contrast in stuff. Walker Buehler's got, you know, one of the best fastballs in baseball, you know, four seam, beating hitters up in the zone. Charlie Morton throws hard. He's got a nasty two seam fastball, but he's also great. Got a great curveball. But I'm more interested in the contrast in personalities. You know, Walker Buehler went to Vanderbilt, so I've known him for a long time. Great guy, unbelievably confident. You know, last week I reached out to Tim Corbin, the coach at Vanderbilt, and said, hey, give me a Walker Buehler story about his confidence. And he said that one time he called him in because Walker wasn't cutting it academically. And he said, Walker, I want you to go home go to your dorm room, and I want you to call your mom and decide which junior college you're going to transfer to because it's not getting done here. And Walker came back and said, well, first off, I decided, you know, I can make it work at Vanderbilt. And two, if I leave, you'll lose your best pitcher. You know, he's unbelievably cocky. And Charlie is like on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. When he signed it, I think it was the fall of 2016, he became a free agent after having a bad year with the Pirates, and the Astros offered him a two-year contract. And he agreed to terms, and then he sits down to his first dinner with the Astros people, and he looks across the table and said, you guys gave me a two-year offer. Why would you do that? Because he just couldn't believe anyone was interested in him on a two-year deal. Given the fact that he had struggled so badly. That's Charlie's personality. I think it's actually part of the reason why he's able to maintain an even keel through high pressure moments like the postseason. And he's won his last five postseason starts. He's unbelievable. I'm excited about this contrasting personalities.
Hey, Buster, the commissioner came out and said that he likes the idea of an expanded postseason and he likes the extra innings rule. I don't think this is a huge surprise to a lot of us because I feel like we thought usually once you crack the door open on something like this, things don't go backwards. They usually go forwards. But how realistic do you think that is? What do you think we're looking at in terms of the postseason going forward and the extra innings rule?
Yeah, I think that there will be expanded playoffs. A story leaked out, I'm sure, from Major League Baseball, a trial balloon back in early February about expanded playoffs to 14 teams. I don't think they'll do 16 teams based on what I've heard at the team level. You know, maybe Rob can convince enough owners to go along with 16 teams, but most of the people at team level say, no, it's too many teams and A and B, there's not enough incentive for the teams to win the division or finish with the best record. And they feel like those teams should have an opportunity for some kind of bye. There absolutely is a lot of support for some kind of rule to help truncate extra innings. And I think there's going to be something. I don't know if it's going to be exactly what we had this year, putting the runner at second base in the 10th inning. And I think the other two rules, universal designated hitter, I think is going to be part of baseball going forward. And the other one, which was the seven-inning doubleheader games, I think that's something that has a lot of support in baseball as well.
Buster, thank you so much for the time. We know you're very, very busy. Enjoy a nice off day, and we'll be listening to you on Friday night right here on 810.
I appreciate it, guys. Always good to talk with you.
That is Buster Olney, who he's the man. You know that. On ESPN. And again, I'll remind you that you could listen to Game 3 of the World Series, Charlie Morton for the Rays, Walker Buehler for the Dodgers, Friday night right here on your radio, home of the World Series in Kansas City, Sports Radio 810 WHB.